Good evening. This is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Laurie Houston. And tonight we are blessed with having Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. And Suzanne's book is called Full Body Present, Learning to Listen to Your Body's Wisdom. Now, we've been talking a lot about full body presence, and I think there's a lot of information out there about how important it is and how essential it is really for, you know, what we're going through and where we're at. And I think this book gives you, you know, really the manual. And it's not just a book, you also have some explorations, which are some downloadable meditations that Suzanne has done for everybody. So, you know, I just want to welcome you, Suzanne, to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit. I know in the book you actually do tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are. Why don't you tell us about that journey? Because it was very important as to how you came into more of your full body.
Yeah. I would say that I came into it. And number one, I want to say that full body presence really is our birthright as human beings. So everything in the book is information that I have practiced, that I have stumbled across, that I have been shown by other people, many times in bits and pieces, and I've brought it all together. But at the core of it is the fact that in my growing up process, I did not have terrible trauma that sort of forced me out of my body. So there were a number of experiences that I had that actually helped me to really start to pay attention to my internal landscape and to have some pretty remarkable experiences in the process. From that one that I describe in the book when I was 10, you know, coming home from the, you know, that revival meeting. My dad was a minister and he was a preacher. And feeling like from all the singing, you know, that I was feeling very resonant inside. But as I came out into the nighttime out of the church and was standing under the trees, sort of, I was on my way walking across the lawn to the parsonage, I suddenly had this like big welling up of feeling from my body that just flooded my physical body, and I suddenly felt really, really close to the sky, like as the stars were right there with me. And at the same time, I felt very small. I was very big and very small. It was as though I was suddenly one with everything. And how do you describe that with words? I mean, very, very difficult. But for a 10-year-old, it was particularly puzzling. I was in a way, I was kind of stunned. But then also there was a sense in me of, oh, this is the way we're meant to be. This is what being alive feels like when we're in connection with the universe. And the thing that I write about in the book is that for probably a week to 10 days after that, there was this quality of grace in my life. The only way I can really describe it is grace. It was much easier to be a kind, big sister, to be just to be connected with my world in a good way, in a good way. And then, of course, it faded. You know, life does what it does. And, but that was my very first touchstone of the fact that within my own body, with no work at all, when things get out of the way, we have this capacity to connect that is just remarkable. And when we do have this flow, this river of energy moving through us the way we're meant to, the navigational system of who we are kicks in and gives you information about what's going on for you internally and what's going on externally. Like that huge sensation of being one with the stars and the trees and the earth was a connection to my external world. But then there was also this really deep sense of flow and juiciness inside of me. So I wasn't losing myself to the external. I was a very deep sense of who I was, but I was also deeply connected to the external.
Which, I think is, you know, extremely important for all of us to have both the external, to really feel in the body and to feel that oneness, because that's our connection with Source. It's that, that is that connection. And then, you know, to also feel within. And as we go through our traumas and the different things that happen in our lives, we certainly have learned to disconnect. And there's a lot of people out there that suggest that that's exactly what we're supposed to do. And it's why I think a lot of things haven't been working necessarily the way they should
that's
be.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk. Go ahead.
You just sort of sparked something in me when you said that piece about how people say that's the way it's supposed to be. In fact, when you have trauma of any kind, and it can be someone repeatedly calling you stupid when you're growing up, or it can be really serious physical trauma, sexual trauma, you know, whatever, the body has its own way of calming itself back down and of surviving that, whatever it was. And it can either freeze or dissociate, or, of course, you can run from circumstances. But the issue is that the body's natural response is to pull away from something that's noxious to begin with. And particularly if it's a large noxious something that's much bigger than who you are as a kid or a baby or a teenager or another human being, you know, if someone's more powerful than you are in a particular circumstance. So our natural response is to pull away and dissociate. The issue is, do you know how to return when it's over? That's really the only question. And that's the piece we've been missing.
Right.
So when people are walking around in semi-states of dissociation because of trauma, they have no real way of navigating well in their world, because they've dissociated to a certain degree. You know, the whole response of the frozen breath that so many different healing systems deal with, you know, getting you back into your breathing and breath, and a lot of what you do with yoga teaches people how to breathe and how to work with things. But all of that is, in my mind, it is there. It is a natural response to pull away, and can we learn how to move back in? And that's, full body presence is really about how do you start to move back into this incredible navigational system that we have. That's my favorite sentence this week. I mean, our bodies are a phenomenal navigational system.
Right.
And do you know how to really operate it? Do you know how to tune in? Do you know how to, in sensation, be able to feel the sensations, not just think about it from our heads, but feel the sensation of operating from deep within? Your inner wisdom, the knowing that your feet have, that your legs have, that your gut knowing has, that your deepest inspiration in your heart has, that, you know, all the different parts of who we are have so much information for us, you know, particularly the gut and the heart. Those are two big centers of intelligence that actually research is starting to show that these are incredible physiological areas where there are the receptors for all kinds of information to be shared with the rest of the body. You know, they talk about the gut brain now and how many endorphins are produced in the gut. I think the gut, when you're really in your gut and you really are solidly grounded, it's one of the best radar protectors when you're in danger or when something's really right, you know, to be able to really sense it. And then the heart, of course. Much has been written about the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a given. People just don't know how to feel safe enough in their hearts. So, dropping back in there is a whole other matter. So
it's true. And, you know, I think there's a lot. I've connected with a lot of different people. And I think what I find the most interesting is that there are some people that are clearly heart people. And there are some people that are clearly third eye people. So they're not necessarily just in their mind, but, you know, they can tap into that place. And then there are some people that are clearly, you know, either gut or solar plexus, and then it depends on, you know, which whether you're from the west or the east as to where your solar plexus is, and whether it's your Hara or your solar plexus. Anyway, it's very interesting, but I found a lot of people are, you know, connecting in their own unique way. And everybody, I think, is so incredibly unique. But I think it's really amazing that there's so much information coming out right now that doesn't contradict one another, but can unifiably come together in a way that complements everything.
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, like my third principle about integrating this life force throughout your entire being, that the person who is a third eye person, who takes in most of their information by tracking things through their third eye, or the person that really has a strong gut, that all of these people have an area that's like their strong point, but they would actually be much better off and healthier if they not only have the third eye, but they have connection to their heart, and they have connection to their gut, and their gut are firmly, you know, their gut knowing is firmly rooted to the planet. So they can feel their feet and their legs underneath of them, so they can walk in the world with their wisdom. So each one of these places are just remarkable as parts of our navigational system, but like any system, it works best when everything is actually inhabited, when you actually have things speaking to all the other parts.
Yeah.
Am I making sense?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah.
So it's an exciting time to be alive, because there is a lot of good information coming out now. And for years, I felt as though I was running behind trying to get this book out. But now that it's actually here, I'm realizing that it has arrived on the scene just as everyone is actually realizing, yes, I need full body presence. Show me how to do it. And there's no battle about, do you want to be in your body anymore? It's for most people. It's like, yes, I do. Show me how I can do it so it feels safe. Show me how I can do it so I can be big enough to hold whatever pain I might find when I return to my body. Mm-hmm. Show me. Just show me how, you know, is the thing I'm hearing from people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very exciting to teach them how. All the lights go on when you do that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about a little bit of the terminology, because it is the first thing that you go through in your book. And I think it's a little important for people to, you know, understand how you define certain things and how the collective consciousness sort of defines certain things. But let's look at, I think pretty much everybody knows what full body presence is, but you've talked about the navigational system a lot. So let's start with that. Suzanne?
Oh, goodness gracious. Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Sorry about that. It just went to, my finger slipped and it went to mute.
Oh, okay.
So what I would say is that full body presence, probably, you know, everyone has their own idea of full body presence. And it might serve us well just to talk about that for just a second.
Absolutely.
I think of full body presence as the ability to feel all parts of your body with a good flow of healthy energy moving through you. The big word there is the ability, because in any given moment, I'm not going to be feeling everything. You can't, or it will be overwhelming. But I have the ability, when I need it, to drop into parts of myself that I need access to in order to make good decisions or to experience life. It also, full body presence, by its nature, includes a connection to your inner healthy resources and your outer resources, so that you have life-giving things coming to you and a good sense of personal boundaries. Now, also, full body presence is the foundation of a strong therapeutic presence that you might hold for someone else, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a key piece, too, for people that are in caring, caretaking roles these days. That's really important that they know how to generate a good, healthy therapeutic presence. Yeah. So the navigational, when I talk about the navigational system, that for me is the metaphor for your body's natural capacity to discern and track what's happening internally for you and externally. And from the information that you receive through the navigational system of your body, you can then make more aware, informed, intelligent decisions. And it also allows you to take action in your life from decisions that you're making from inside yourself. So I think of the navigational system of our body as being something that helps us self-reference. I was actually having a conversation with my teenagers last night at the dinner table about self-referencing, and really the whole definition of it. And by the time we got done, we were all in agreement, which was very cool, which is the capacity to self-reference is when you have integrity and you can feel your insides, you have a much better chance of not making decisions that would be harmful for yourself or for those around you or for the greater good in the world. It's just the way it works.
Right.
That when I have a feeling in my gut, a really strong feeling about something, if I listen to what my heart and my mind have to say about that strong feeling, I may not act on it, but I still know that I have it. And I would act with integrity as opposed to just lashing out. Do you understand what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that because I think integrity is a huge piece that we often... it's a piece that we're all sort of coming to understand and, you know, being that authentic person that we have sort of hidden. And it's just, like you said, it's a very interesting time. And let's talk about healthy boundaries, because that is something that is so evident in your book and the techniques and the ways that you have described for people to get in touch with themselves certainly mm-hmm. allow for that to occur. In a way that I think no one's really been able to explain so well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a little bit different take on boundaries than most metaphysical people, mm-hmm. by the way. Most of what I was taught by my metaphysical teachers was that you want to put up, you know, a psychic shield, or you want to surround yourself with white light, or, you know, if you're in the Catholic Church, you want to say 1,000 Hail Marys to protect yourself. For me, I really think that, you know, that each of our skin defines our physical boundary, which is not meant to be crossed by anybody without our permission. But I think of a boundary as the awareness of where I stop and the rest of the world begins. And a healthy boundary allows me to let in nurturing resources and to filter out what's life-taking or draining. So that, in turn, gives me the power to say yes or no to the people who want to cross those boundaries. You know, if my beloved is coming to meet me, I want to say yes and allow him in. If someone who's being very negative is shouting at me, I want to be able to say no and keep that out. So things that aren't appropriate or healing get filtered out or stopped at the boundary of who I am. And things that are good and that are nurturing are given the go-ahead to come on in and be soaked in and soaked up, and so that I can really stay full. The other piece that I often say is that a healthy boundary is most often achieved by having a full container,
mm-hmm.
meaning, you know, the metaphor of my body being a container, I and the energy flow that moves through me, that I can really hold a healthy boundary. When my container is full, you can't put any more water in a glass that's already full. So that's, if I can stay full of healthy, you know, filling up from healthy resources, I have a capacity to say no easily and fully when mm-hmm. something isn't right. I also can really show up if something delicious has entered my life and I want to connect with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last thing that I thought was very, let's say, profound, but in a way it was, because I think growing up kind of in a more, I guess, more of a yoga tradition, grounding, I always did through my root. And most of my meditations and work that I've done has been, you know, grounding through the root, where you talk about grounding from the feet. And when we get into that about the explorations, I mean, I can tell you about my experience because it was very profound. So, but, you know, talk about grounding because it's slightly different than, you know, a lot of the philosophies out there.
Yeah. And I actually did spend 17 years grounding through my root chakra and sitting in meditation in lotus position. And what happened was I was able to really grow strong energy muscles and from my root chakra on up through the channels, the different channels for intake and release and the circulation and all of that. But when I would get up to leave my meditation chamber or my room, I had difficulty walking in my world with the spiritual knowledge that I had. And I think it was because I did not have my feet and legs engaged in the grounding process and in the chi gathering process that I was doing. So what began to happen then, when I began to really, I worked with some indigenous teachers, I worked with several other metaphysicians and lots of different people in my own process, and I began to realize that we had to include the feet and legs in the filling process in order for us as human beings, because we are on two legs when we walk, is we have to have energy. We have to have a sense of flow in our feet and legs if we want to be able to walk in the world with what we know to be our internal wisdom. Yeah. So that was when I really began to change that. So you played with my exploration and you had a particular experience that you would like to share?
Yeah. It was very, very profound. Part of it I had uncovered before, so I knew partially why I was experiencing a certain hip problem, and I knew very quickly what the feeling around that was, which was some pretty adamant rage. And because I have right now HPV with a little bit of dysplasia, which has never gone through past low grade, so they don't really do anything about it. But
And it's dysplasia of the...
Cervix.
Of the cervix.
Yeah.
I can almost hear you. You're just a little bit far away.
Okay. I'm just worried that I keep clipping here, so people are going to have to lower their speakers when they listen to the show.
Okay.
So... the anger then went into my, I guess into my womb or into my uterus, and even though it's not, the HPV isn't there, so then that went into like just a profound grief and sadness. But from there, what I was really surprised is that it went into this tiny, it was almost like a seed, but the seed was like a black hole. And that was where I picked up some stuff from my birth mother. But it was just this, you know, this belief, but just this like tiniest, like I would have missed it anywhere else if I wasn't being quite so aware and conscious and in my body.
Yeah.
To have the transformation go from the hip into the uterus and then to this tiny, just infinitely tiny space, similar to, you know, the opposite, which is in my heart, which is that, you know, that spark of divinity that we connect with. And this was just this like a black hole. And it was interesting. I did some work on it with someone this week, and you know, he just sort of said, well, you've connected in with a core aspect of yourself, but also, you know, what he wanted to do was to reverse the flow so that instead of it going out, then I was bringing that energy in. So it was an interesting process.
And did that work to reverse the flow?
It was very different. So it now I'm working on every time I feel it going the opposite way to slow it down and to bring it in. It's not going very fast yet. It's still going very slow, but to begin working with changing the flow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
But it made me also think of, you know, all the yogis and everybody that, you know, when you do meditation for hours, I mean, your legs go numb. And it's
exactly
to be expected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we really truly aren't engaging in our trunk. Like, it's our, you know, it's a major part of our body that we, you know, that we've completely ignored for centuries.
Right. Well, and I also think that in different time periods, historically, we've needed certain things. And being seated still in a lotus position is something that has its usefulness at a certain point, but it's not so much what we need in the modern world right now.
Yeah.
In the same way, there's certain shamanic traditions of how to heal people, of going in and sort of sucking out whatever is wrong in the other person's system. And then when you were the shaman in the indigenous tribe, you went off in the forest and let go of whatever that stuff was that you had sucked up, but you had 3 or 4 days to do it while the tribe took care of your family.
Right.
We can't. That's another tradition for healing that we can no longer do. It doesn't work in today's world. And I think in the same way, it's not as called for, this seated position that cuts off your feet and legs.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about it that is becoming almost obsolete. We need spiritual traditions that help us fill our entire bodies.
Yeah,
and that's just my own opinion there.
Yeah, and I think it's really important. I think there's definitely something into it. As you know, as I went through the process and read your book and did the explorations, I mean, it really became, yeah, this is
it became what?
It just became really clear that this is something that we need to be doing. Yeah, I thought it was great. So let's talk about how we as society sort of became out of touch.
Yeah.
We've ignored our gut. You know, we try to be polite because we think, you know, we have to be this good girl or this good boy. And so we're being inauthentic by, you know, trying to live up to other people's expectations and judgments. And
yeah. Yeah. And then in the process, cutting off parts of ourselves. Cutting off parts of ourselves. That's right. And you know, I would also say, you know, that story that I have in the book about being strangled when I was 17. Mm-hmm. I know the reason why I wasn't listening to my gut. My gut was radioing me every 3 seconds to get out of the car, get out of the car, get out of the car. Something's off. Something's wrong here. And I wouldn't go because I was too polite.
Mm-hmm.
I was too polite. He was a friend. Mm-hmm. You know, my linear mind was saying, oh, No, that feeling of not being safe, that's not real. He's your friend. You know, he's your friend. Well, in that moment, he was not being my friend. You know, he was being pretty much a lunatic. And I sensed it, but I didn't act on it. So that's right. I mean, there are many ways that we move away from ourselves, so to speak, and that we are in the process right now of learning how to move back
mm-hmm.
into the wisdom of the body. Yeah.
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 So let's talk about your 5 principles.
Okay. Okay. I really had a lot of fun putting these together. The 5 principles sit on a circle. Each of them sits in its own circle, and then it sits on a circle as well. And to give you the 5,000-foot view of them, they are to trust the existence of nurturing life energy, to feel the presence of this life energy in your body, to integrate this life energy throughout your entire system, to expand your perceptual lens, and to choose nourishing resources moment to moment.
Right.
So they are the 5, and in a sense I say they are the 5 concepts or attitudes or ways that the mind can begin to grasp what this feeling, sensing, full body process is about.
And also,
yeah.
I think, as you mentioned in your book, is that, you know, we all have one or more areas where we sort of sabotage. You know, there's an area of one of these 5 principles that
mm-hmm.
that we have to sort of start from, that is our touchstone that we need to manifest within our lives to allow everything to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So so, for instance, like trusting that there's an unlimited source of nourishing, life-giving energy in the universe, which quantum physics has now shown us is true, that allows you to relinquish fear.
Yeah.
You know, it, when you can have this level of trust, you can let go of fear. You can live from trust, and then there's a deep kind of a moment-to-moment recognition that you are loved and you're also being supported throughout your life. I mean, we've all had examples in front of us of people who were being fully supported and they could not see it because they were in so much fear. They had contracted so much, dissociated so much, that they could not see the support that was there for them. So the process of adopting this attitude of trust is like recognizing something that's always here that you have as a resource, and how it changes everything around you. Yeah.
And feeling is so important because we have a lack of nurturing touch. I mean, we're so touch deprived. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. No, that is, our culture has a rampant, and it's almost completely unconscious, lack of nurturing touch.
Well, I think I personally think it goes back to how sexually repressed we are. And
absolutely.
That if you know, any type of touch, especially for a man, any type of touch automatically, you know, brings a sexual response. And
right.
And so there's so much shame and guilt, and
it's
just unbelievable.
Yeah. And that is very, very true. And our root chakra and the pelvis are the seat of a huge well of energy. So if you are terrified of your sexuality, then you're going to have to sit on, literally, the very basic energy source that juices us up. So, and I can remember watching my children when they were little, and the capacity to just be in their bodies with all of who they are. And that's something that we lose in our culture. You know, one of the ways that I think, you know, and that ability, you know, when you come to principle two, feel the presence of life energy in your body, that's our natural state of being. That's our birthright. And when you have that, it does begin to open your awareness. You also begin to have a sense of belonging in your body. You know, this is my body. This is where I belong. You have better access to your inner wisdom. You also can experience more vitality and joy. So all of these things come together, and what we're looking at, you know, my basic exploration, the exploration one and two that go with the book, really teach people how to get that just ground level sense of what's going on internally. Can you feel, how much life can you feel inside your body, and how would you know it? What sensations would be your signals? Would it be warmth or coolness? Do you feel life as a pulsation? Does it feel like a hum? Does it feel like a particular color? I really engage people with their curiosity. I say, be curious, not judgmental. Let your judgmental mind stay out of the room for the moment. And just be curious about what you feel inside. And if you don't feel a lot, and in any given class that I teach, there'll be at least one person who says, you know, I don't really feel a whole lot. I don't. And when I ask historically what has gone on for them, almost always they have a history of either neglect, they just were not touched. So their nervous system just hasn't grown up yet. You know, it's almost as though their internal body map isn't painted in yet. The roads aren't drawn in, and they need more work to give them, you know, more grounding, more filling, more nurturing body work to be able to fill in their own internal body map. Or they've had trauma of some kind that has caused them to have to dissociate. We were talking about that earlier. Some level of dissociation also leaves the body with a lack of feeling. So the process of returning to the body, whether it was neglect or whether it was trauma, is kind of the key piece here for honoring this principle of feeling the presence of life energy in your body. Now, one of my favorite ways to do that is, by the way, really good body work. Mm-hmm. You know, I began my work teaching craniosacral therapists about how to be in their bodies, and good body work, like craniosacral therapy or visceral work or lymph or good massage or, you know, something like that that really honors the body's own wisdom is how one of the best ways to augment your own exploration inside yourself. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so integrating is really, you know, exploring sort of our emotions, our thoughts, our beliefs. And I love that you talk about curiosity because, you know, I think a lot of people talk about, you know, go back to your childhood and remember what it was like when, you know, everything was new all the time. And that is a healthy way to live our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And, that integration principle speaks to that idea of having a full personal container, which gives you your strong, flexible, healthy boundaries. When I can start to integrate this feeling of life force moving all the way through me, then I do have a capacity to have healthy connections and healthy boundaries. The other piece is that you wouldn't expect your car to be able to drive down the road with half the engine not operating. And yet, at the same time, you know, we have different things happen to us that lock us out of our physical bodies. And yet we expect when we're growing up, we're then expected when we are grown up to be able to operate from the very part of ourselves that we had to dissociate from growing up. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here you are, you're being asked to drive the car of your existence down the road without the steering wheel or without one tire or something. You know, it's if you want to use that analogy. So integrating this felt sense throughout entire. And I mean, you're exactly right. You said this a few minutes ago. You have to be able to feel all your feelings. I'm not saying you act on them, but you have to be able to feel them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to have, it has to be okay. You have to be able to feel your power or your sensuality and sexuality without feeling ashamed. You have to be able to have your outrage when something goes wrong without feeling terrified of it. You have to be able to feel your tenderness in order to be in a good, intimate relationship. And yet, if you've been raised that being tender or vulnerable is a dangerous thing to have in your family of origin, how difficult is it then to get in touch with it when you have a deep relationship that you want to make that connection with? So at that level, we're integrating all our feelings, but also our physical body, being able to feel all the parts of ourselves. Because particularly in craniosacral therapy, we talk about cellular intelligence. And the feet have a particular wisdom. The gut, I was talking about this earlier, the gut has its own particular brand of wisdom that's very, very helpful. The heart. Our bones have a wisdom.
Mm.
Our bones. You know, we talk in the culture about it. We'll say, I was just like a bone-deep feeling. You know, I felt that all the way to my bones. You know, that's a sense of something being that just has gone clear through you. It's really a part of you. And then, you know, you can also have a sense of, at a core level, something being very, very wrong, you know. And you feel that in your bones as well. Do you know what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
So the body in every cell of it has its own wisdom. And so we're meant to have this life force connecting all the different parts of ourselves and engaging this incredible navigational system of who we are. Yeah. Yeah. So the next principle is then to expand your perceptual lens.
And how big is that? Because really, I mean, perceptual lens, I mean, it's so crazy because, you know, we all think that what we perceive is absolute truth. And,
right.
You know, we're so convinced that we are so right. And, you know, we use those judgments that we've created. And it's amazing when you can sort of step aside and see it from the bigger picture. But we get so caught up in our own perceptual lens.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way you know that your perceptual lens is off is when you have some kind of a limiting belief or you have an expectation that you need to release that really doesn't jive with your reality. And in that moment, most often people get really charged. If I come up here and something's going on in my office and I expect that my staff knows what's going on and they don't, then I get charged if it doesn't happen. But it's because I have an expectation. And perhaps this particular person in my office hasn't had the training to do what I'm expecting. So once I get that, once I expand my perceptual lens and I go, oh, she doesn't know how to do that yet, then I can let go of the charge. I've released my expectation, my unrealistic expectation, that this is going to happen in a particular way at a particular time. So there's a quality of really being in contact with when we feel charged, when things aren't working so well. Can you then expand your perceptual lens and recognize that the way you're seeing the world in that moment may or may not be real?
Mm-hmm.
And if it feels charged, chances are you need to widen your lens. You need to have a wider, more expanded view of what's going on so that you can actually see what's happening, what's really happening. This is really helpful in personal relationships
mm-hmm.
because so often we put people in boxes. Oh, that's just so-and-so. He never remembers me. Or, oh my God, that is my beloved teacher whom nothing can go. This person always knows exactly what I need and how it happens. Well, I hate to tell you, but human people are human.
Yeah.
Even if they are some level of enlightened being, they still, in certain circumstances, they're not going to know exactly what needs to happen. But if we have them up on a pedestal, we have certain expectations that can't possibly be met. So the quality of really seeing people for who they actually are is very, very, very helpful because it makes for much more realistic, practical, down-to-earth relationships, and then also for us to be able to make a deeper connection because we're not expecting things from people that they can't give. We actually see who they are. That story I have in the book about my friend who is always late
mm-hmm.
is a great piece on that because something as simple as lateness. People have a perceptual lens about what lateness means. Someone's disrespecting me or they don't care about me or I'm not important enough to them. When actually it might be about the fact that they're completely overwhelmed in their own life and they just can't get it together and has nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you've just separated yourself from them by judging their lateness as meaning something that it may not mean at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also like in that chapter where you talk about, you know, if we're in the past a lot, then our energy is behind our container. And if we're in the future, it's in front of us. And I think that's a really powerful thing to look at because I mean, we do this all the time.
Yeah, we absolutely do it all the time. We're either ahead of ourselves with worry or we are behind ourselves with caught in an old way of seeing who we are. And that both of those are really kickers in terms of who we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the whole process of seeing ourselves clearly is an important one.
Yeah.
And that expanding your perceptual lens is a key piece of that.
Right.
Yeah. So the last principle is to choose nourishing resources moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that one really does require, you know, it's the one that kind of seals all the other four together. Because it basically says, if you are not okay with taking care of yourself and with choosing things that are life-enhancing for you on a moment-to-moment basis in your life, all the rest of these principles are not going to last very long because you're not going to last very long. If you can't put your own oxygen mask on first, there won't be anybody left to help the people around you. So this is a really key piece, recognizing what resources are nourishing for you and life-enhancing, what are not, and then choosing them, making that your default stance. if you will, making it woven into the fabric of your life. It takes courage, because the culture we live in is a very addictive culture. It takes courage to walk your own path and to choose healthy resources. It takes commitment, because you got to keep doing it over and over and over again. This is not something you do once and then walk away. And then it also takes kindness, because none of us choose perfectly in each moment. We're constantly learning about what's the most helpful thing now. And that changes as we age and as we grow and as our life experiences change. But the capacity to tune in moment to moment and say, okay, this is what would be life-enhancing for me right now, that's a very key ability to have in order to keep going and to have the juice to be able to create what you came here to create as a soul. Yeah. So those are my five.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of fun with them when I'm teaching people.
I bet you do. I think just stay with the choosing thing, but you know, as a culture, we've so been taught to look at everybody else ahead of ourselves that
right, particularly if we're women, by the way, or if we are in helping professions like healthcare.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I was just teaching a class in Edmonton, Alberta last week. Had a huge class, actually. It's about 46 people, and the fascinating piece was on the third day. One of the gentlemen in the class said, you know, this is just amazing. It has taken me 2.5 days to turn off my giving button and turn on my receiving button.
Yes.
He said, I operate as a healthcare person so much from the giving button. I'm constantly looking at how can I help? How can I help? How can I help? How can I help? It took me 2.5 days to find my receive button, you know? So that I could slow down and start to receive what would nourish and nurture me. It wasn't that I had a rule against it. I just didn't even know where it was. It was so hidden away. And I think that can be true for people in healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't even realize.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about your explorations. I thought they're in the book. They're written out in the book, and then you also have them on your website. Which, you know, it's a nice gift.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that, first of all, I have to say that I'm an oral tradition person.
Right.
I put out a whole audio series with 10 different sessions for how to refill and resource yourself. It's a great, great audio series. By the way, it still stands the test of time. We still sell a lot of them because it's really still very, very valid today. But that audio series was where I started because, you know, I would sit down and go into my own process and stuff would just come to me. And slowly I refined it so that it's much more available to your average person. But those three audio explorations that are in the book that are the download that you can get from my website or, you know, if people don't know how to download, they can, you know, get to us and order the CD. But what they do is the first one teaches people how to tune in, how to get your curiosity on board, and how to tune in inside yourself and really be able to take an accurate baseline of how you're doing right now. How are you doing right now? Are you empty? Are you depleted? Are you full? Are you partially full? Are you in pain with something? Are you feeling elated with something? Just to be able to take an accurate baseline of your entire system from head to toe. That's what that first exploration teaches you. Then the second one goes into, okay, now that you've got your baseline, let's teach you the skill of how to connect to an external, unconditional resource and fill up. And that's what that second exploration does. Teaches you how to connect to the earth, how to connect to what would nourish you most in the earth's rich energy field, and how to begin to ask, what would nourish my feet? What would nourish my knees? What would nourish? And the cool part about it is you don't have to know in your mind ahead of time what's going to nourish you. You just set the intention to be nourished and open up your channels and watch what sensation comes in. So this is the other piece that I think is important for people to know. This is not guided imagery. Guided imagery is a wonderful thing. But this is not guided imagery. I don't ever tell people in these explorations what to find. I ask them to engage their curiosity, to go inside and to listen and to sense and to feel and to be able to touch their insides with color and texture. What does their system want? And oftentimes, what your spine wants is different than what your feet and leg want. You know, that, and your belly might want an entirely different quality of energy. And when you just go into all these different parts of yourself and ask, you know, you're connected to the earth underneath of you, and asking, you'll be amazed at what shows up. So once we get through that, and you're full, and you've got a container that's full, or as full as it can be in this moment, and what I find is mine gets fuller and fuller as I go on in life, then I teach people how to begin to connect with the parts of themselves that they're locked out of. So how do I begin to connect with the pieces and parts of myself that are the parts that have been traumatized, the parts that have been injured, the parts that I was never taught to be in? You know, I tell that story in the book about growing up on the front pew of that Southern Baptist church. I didn't live in the lower half of my body, by and large, growing up. I mean, I was athletic. I was a tomboy, so I had a certain level of it, but I really didn't know the lower half of my body when I left home. Mm-hmm. And it was only in my own learning and growing in the last 30 years that that has really become much more a part of who I am, and I'm much more comfortable with it. So that helped me, you know, how do I begin to hold the parts of myself that I'm locked out of? That's really the big issue here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So once you've gone through those three explorations, and I really love having the audio, and I highly suggest that people really use the audio series, because it really carries you in a way that just reading it in the back of the book can't do.
Right.
If you're reading, it's much more difficult to be inside. So that's it. That's
right.
What we've got.
But there's three parts to the last one, to the healing
one.
Yes,
there is. Yes, there is. And the first part teaches you how to hold a physical place. The second part teaches you how to hold and work with a limiting belief that may be anchored, you know, like a belief that you're not good enough, that's anchored in a tight spot in your chest or your heart, or a feeling of being too much that's wrapped up in a tension in your gut. And then the third segment of that exploration three has to do with being able to really hold in a loving way relationships or things that feel wrong between you and someone else, but to really hold your part of it, whatever it is, and to hold it in a way that has integrity and can heal. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think one of the best part of the books as well, and I really, really think everybody should get this book, because I do think it's a great handbook to really understanding how to get in your body and understanding all the different things that happen. But, you know, one of the big things that have been coming up a lot lately is the resistance aspect. And
yeah.
Resistance is huge. Understanding, you know, how we create resistance, whether it's in our physical body or it's in our beliefs and thoughts, or
yeah.
whether it's in our emotions. And I think it's really quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I actually don't just hand out the audio to people, because I want them to understand, and there's a whole chapter on resistance
yeah.
and all the different ways that resistance shows up. I want people to understand that so that when they actually run across it in their system, they recognize it for what it is, rather than thinking that it's something real. You know, they actually recognize it as, that is.
It's all my fault.
My resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can make a different choice when you recognize it. You can make a different choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it is important. It's an important piece, because I think, you know, a lot of times we do have this resistance that we're not, you know, we're not conscious of. And, you know,
yeah.
they are the beliefs, and they are, you know, part of our lens that we need to expand. And it's just, you know, because I think because we have been such a victim mentality, the one on, you know, it's all your fault. It's,
yeah.
you know, that's a huge blame game that we've been taught is appropriate. I mean, it's
right.
not even, I mean, it's, you know, it's accepted. It's appropriate.
Yeah.
It is somebody else's fault. It's never our fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that it should be our fault either, but, you know, we're either blaming ourselves or we're blaming somebody else.
Yep.
Yeah. And being, you know, able to see that bigger picture and being able to move through all that, I think is really, it's a gift, but it's something that we all have the capacity to do.
Yeah. And isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
That we do. We all have the capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, at the end, you talk about how energy is the alchemy of deep transformation. And
yes.
I really like that.
Loving energy.
Yes,
loving
agape.
Energy. Actually, that is my favorite quote in the entire book. Let me see if I can find it. I really, really love that one. Yes. The energy that truly allows the alchemy of deep transformation to occur is love. Love in the sense of agape, the ancient, all-encompassing, unconditional love of God, Goddess, Christ, Buddha, Great Spirit, or any other name given to the compassionate source of life. Agape brings us into deeper connection with the universe. And I say to people, you know, if they're working with their resistance, again, allow yourself to deeply feel this love in your body, not simply to imagine or visualize it, although it can have visual components. The energy of love ignites the alchemy of true healing, transforming tight, painful, wounded places into connected, healed components of who we are. When this alchemy is complete, out of our deepest wounds can come our greatest gifts. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Suzanne, it's a great book.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Now, I hear you're coming to Toronto, so tell us about that, or you're having somebody come that's going to be teaching.
Yes, actually, I have an absolutely delightful teacher, Lori Chinitz. She's from New York. She'll be coming. She's a physical therapist. She'll be coming to Toronto She'll be coming November 11th through the 14th to Toronto. And for Canadians, actually, I have a Canadian sponsor up there. Her name is Tamara Watt. And you can get to her at H as in healing, mm-hmm. F as in from, C as in the core, HFC in Canada at gmail.com. Tamara Watt is her name, and that's where you would go to find out more about the class. You can also go to my website, fullbodypresence.com, and click on workshops, and there'll be information about that Toronto class on our website and the connection to how to get to Tamara to sign up for the class.
Great.
And it will be a 4-day class, Thursday through Sunday, coming up in November there in Toronto.
Great. And anything else that you would like to, so obviously we can get to, you have two websites.
You know, I have one website and two ways to get there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so you can come through fullbodypresence.com, you can come through healingfromthecore.com. Either way will take you right to the same website.
Okay.
There used to be two and then it got too confusing, so we kind of slid them all into one, and
nice.
It was great.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. This has been a great and insightful. And I hope people get your book because I really do think it's, you know, it's a clear manual on how to assist ourselves to getting into our full body presence.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It really was a labor of love to get it done. And I am really loving spreading the word about it. It's been so much my own journey, and it's been really wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Thank you.
Okay.